So for those of you who weren't here last week, we've just started a new sort of autumn Sangha night theme, which is the elements. So last week, Paramananda was in his magical way, deep and meandering way, was leading us through something called the six element practice, and then he was talking about all six of the elements. So in Buddhism, there are six elements. So usually sort of, well, there are four elements that the sort of the material world and the physical universe is made out of, which is earth, water, fire, and air. And in Buddhism, there is also, well, not only in Buddhism, in other philosophies too, there is then as a fifth element space, which contains those other four elements. And then very importantly in Buddhism, there is then consciousness that comes out of the space containing all of those elements. So I suppose one way of looking at it, very shortly in a nutshell, and we'll hear more obviously about each of the elements, including consciousness, but enlightened consciousness is thought to be, it's called the bodhicitta, so it's kind of, in a way, kind of an energy of wisdom and compassion that kind of suffuses everything. So you can imagine it, there are the four elements that the physical world is made out of, then there is space that contains all of those, and then there is a consciousness that arises from all of that. So that is, in a very short nutshell, the conception of the universe in Buddhism, in a way. What I'm going to say today about the earth element, and is a lot of it is taken from a talk, that's a very, very old talk of Sangharakshita's from 1971, where he talks about all of the elements, which is a... I'm going to send a link to Ratnaprabha and those of you who are on the mailing list for the little newsletter that comes round. It's well worth listening to on Free Buddhist Audio. You can listen to that talk on Free Buddhist Audio. It's yes, it's a very old talk. And what's very clear is it's quite soon after Sangharakshita has come back from India and has been taught by all of his teachers, and he's obviously filled with enthusiasm for everything he's learned and wanting to share it. So it's quite an extraordinary talk. It's nice sometimes to go back to those old talks and listening to them. Okay. So in the framework of Buddhist thought, the four material elements make up what's called rupa, which is form. So like I've just said, that's kind of the physical universe. And in Buddhism, there is another teaching, which I won't go further into today, but I'll just tell you, where it's said that all of the world, all of life, all of everything is made up just of five skandhas. That translates as five heaps. And I won't even tell you what those five heaps are, but I quite like that sort of idea that there are five heaps and everything is made out of them and there's nothing outside of those five heaps. And one of those five heaps is rupa, or form, is the physical universe, and that's the elements. So that's where the elements sort of fit into what we're into the Dharma, into Buddhism. So there's the four great elements, which are also called the great ghosts of earth, water, fire, and air, and then space, like I've just said, and consciousness coming out of that. So when we meditate, I suppose, what we're trying to do, in one way of thinking about what we're trying to do in meditation in terms of the elements, is we try and loosen, you know, we try and loosen our attachment to our own self, we try and loosen our attachment to everything that is, and just really experience what is happening. And when quite a lot of us, you might have had this experience, what we do experience quite often is that we're not separate from the world, that everything is actually very interconnected. We can feel very connected. You can almost lose the boundaries sometimes between yourself, between inside and outside. So when you look at the world in terms of the elements, all of those six elements are insiders as well as outsiders. So with earth, you know, there is the earth outside, like we've been visualizing in the meditation before, the forest floor, you know, the trees, mountains, things that are solid, feel solid and stable and supportive outside in the world. in our bodies, there are our bones and our muscles and our tendons and everything that gives our body structure, our teeth, our hair. You know, there are parts of our bodies that are mainly made from the earth element and are kind of solid and stable and enable us to be upright, not like a jellyfish, for example. You know, if we didn't have a skeleton, then we wouldn't have a structure to our bodies. So there is always an echo or a mirroring between the elements outside and the elements inside, which is very interesting. And that's how you can sort of connect directly the outside and the inside. So to me, it's quite a kind of mind-boggling thought that, you know, there is just these six elements and that's all there is and there's nothing outside of that. In a way, I imagine that to the Buddha and his followers, it might not have been such an astounding thought, because in the time of the Buddha, people were still much more living outdoors and they had more of a direct connection to nature. They hadn't lost that as much as particularly those of us in the city have, and they might have felt much more naturally, you know, that of course we're interconnected with the world. When the Buddha was teaching, he was encouraging his followers not to settle down inside any buildings, but to, except in the rainy season when this was very difficult, to actually live and meditate and sleep and stay at the roots of trees, you know, and very directly encourage them to have that connection with nature for that reason, so that you can directly experience your connection, the inside and the outside. So that you can imagine sort of the Buddha and his followers sitting under these trees and being suffused by that ancient, slow, powerful energy. I mean, I don't know if any of you have done that, but if you are in a forest, you can actually feel trees like living beings. And they would have quite naturally, I think, felt that. For us, it's probably more unusual. We really have to go out of our way to contact that kind of connection between ourselves as human beings and other living beings. Non-human beings. And the Buddha himself gained enlightenment at the foot of a great tree. So, you know, one of the stories is he not very successfully sort of tried to strive, he starved himself, he did all his ascetic practices, trying to sort of find out the truth and finding a way out of suffering. But in the end, he found that actually none of that was helping very much. And he kind of stumbled upon that actually he needed to maybe do the opposite and relax. He had this memory, you know, he was thinking, I'm not getting anywhere, you know, I've done all these practices, I'm not getting anywhere. He needed a memory one day, apparently, of how, as a boy, he was watching his father plough a field, and he was just sitting under a tree, and the sunlight was sort of streaming across this field, and he could see the rows, and he just remembers feeling like completely content and happy, and like everything was all right and nothing needed to change. And he thought that feeling somehow suddenly seemed the key to him. That's what he needed to get to. And it was at that point that he decided he's going to sit at the foot of the Bodhi tree and he's not going to get up until he has seen the truth. You know, so he kind of thought, yes, it's not striving and restless activity that's needed. It's relaxing and releasing tension and connecting with the elements, I guess. And then when he, the other interesting story that connects with the elements, so when he emerged from his meditation and he had gained enlightenment, the story goes that he had many doubts, you know, he was assailed by doubts. And you might have heard this story of Mara appeared to him. Mara is this kind of character who appears, and it's kind of a personification of your own doubts. And, you know, when you think, who do you think, you know, one of the things he was telling himself, who do you think you are? You know, having discovered the truth and being able to teach people and really sort of doubting himself. And when that was happening to him, he talked himself through these doubts, and he, just like this Buddha figure here on the shrine, he touched the earth and he said, oh, the earth is my witness to what I've attained. And in the story, in the mythical story, the earth goddess actually appears and confirms, yes, you know, I can testify to this man sort of having gained, you know, having practiced all of those years and gained enlightenment. So this appearance of the earth goddess in the story I suppose what that shows to me is that the Buddhist conception of the universe sort of directly arose from earlier, quite shamanistic, sort of animist beliefs that everything is alive, that everything in nature is kind of alive and suffused with a specific quality of energy. And that goes not only for people and animals and plants, but also for kind of landscapes, you know, rocks, features in the landscape, places, you know, particular places have particular atmospheres. And some people, I mean, some of us who might be sensitive to that can feel that, you know. There is a particular atmosphere that you can feel sometimes near a mountain or near a river or in a forest. Each specific place has a different atmosphere. And you can even find this with buildings and with rooms. I mean, I don't know if some of you might feel that here. I'm beginning to feel it here. You know, all the practice that has gone on, for example, in a room like this shrine room, you can feel it in the atmosphere. It has a life to it. It has a spirit to it that sort of suffuses a space, and even more so in a natural space. So the particular quality of energy will depend on, you know, the location, the shape, the light levels, the temperature, the materials, of you know, all of that influences the particular atmosphere of a place. And then each of us has also a particular unique quality of energy perceptible to those sensitive enough to tune into it. I mean, some sensitive people can see auras around people, you know, and not all of us can do that. But I think all of us can, you can sense a certain sort of quality, a certain temperament from people. You know, each person has their own unique energy. And animals is quite, I mean, those of you who've had pets or something, animals can feel things, can't they? I mean, they know, for example, if you have an animal, a cat or a dog, they know when you're not well. They know when you're not happy, you know, they might approach you. They can sense it. They can physically, viscerally feel it. And we as people have sometimes lost that sense. And probably when you were living in a traditional culture, you would have had that still more. And then most traditional tribal peoples, they would include rocks, mountains, the earth itself as a great complex being within this frame of reference, with everything sort of interconnected and influencing each other for good or ill. So Buddhism has developed and refined these ancient beliefs with a particular emphasis, I suppose, on the dynamic nature of it. So it's not that this mountain means that, that tree means that. In Buddhism, there's a particular emphasis that energies, yes, there are energies in everything that lives, and they change all the time, and they influence each other. And we, as human beings, I suppose, we can be aware of all of that, and if we develop our minds, we can direct these energies into, you know, towards wisdom and compassion. So it opens up a great possibility. You know, there is this energy that suffuses everything. We can be aware of it inside ourselves and in the world, and then that means we can influence it as well. So another contemporary example of what I'm talking about, for those of you who were on the Sangha retreat the other weekend, we went to this new retreat centre, Vajrasana in Suffolk, and I don't know about you, but I could certainly feel something there in the atmosphere of that place. It's just been rebuilt, and the architects who built the place have used particular colours, particular materials, particular shapes, a particular layout of the space. And what I certainly experienced happening was that the space itself encouraged all of us who were there to go deep in our practice, you know, to go inward, to come together in a particular way. And I know from having been in the sort of meetings when the architects were planning it, that was their vision. And being there, it was very, very interesting. I mean, I didn't necessarily like everything about the place, but what I could really feel is that something worked there. You know, people went there, and even though it was only a weekend retreat, people went quite deep in their meditation quite quickly, and something just came together, and it was to do with the space and the quality of space somebody had created there for a particular purpose. So to come to the earth element specifically, And I hope some of you might have had some degree of kind of a visceral experience of connecting to the element earth when we did that meditation in the first half. So on the positive side, we might have perceived a sense of solidity and stability and strength and structure, sort of this reassuring, supportive density of the earth when you get in contact with the earth. On the negative side, I suppose what can happen is that some people might have experienced a bit of claustrophobia, a bit of being trapped or feeling blocked or obstructed. Earth can sort of feel quite hard and cold, with a sense of not being able to move in terms of energy. So in terms of energy, Earth represents static energy and potential energy. Sort of energy that's bound up quite tightly and doesn't move very much. It makes it very stable and solid, but it also can make it kind of quite restrictive. So if you talk in terms of energy about people, I suppose you can say if somebody has got like their earth energy is very strong, they would be quite a rigid, hard, cold person, maybe quite closed. Their energy would be quite repressed and held in, probably. On the other hand, if somebody has quite an optimal amount of earth energy, they would be perceived as somebody who's got firm boundaries, who's, you know, people say, don't they, that's a solid person. So somebody who's solid, who's reliable. So, you know, you can have, you can sort of, it's quite interesting to think of yourself and other people in terms of energy, in terms of the elements, elemental energy. So earth energy has got that quality of solidity, and you can have too much of it or too little of it, or you can have an optimum amount of it. And in terms of energy centres, I think Paramananda was talking last week about the energy centres or the chakras in the body. So in terms of chakras in the body, the earth element is connected with the lower belly, with a root, the root chakra, which is right at the base of your spine, down here, giving you kind of a base and a foundation. And as I said in the first half, in terms of Tai Chi or Qigong, it's called Dan Tien, so it's the kind of centre that gives you, makes it possible for you to find the right balance to stand and to move, you know, really, really roots you on the ground. So in meditation, when we focus our attention on the root chakra, this can help us feel grounded and centred. So there is this image by Dogen, who's a Japanese Buddhist, of the body like a mountain. That's where it comes from, sort of giving you really a firm foundation for your meditation. However, if this chakra is closed or blocked, we can also feel quite sluggish and dull and constricted in our bodies and minds. So again, you know, sometimes it is a good idea to focus on that centre if you're maybe feeling quite up in your mind or quite spaced out. But if you're already feeling quite sluggish and quite dull, it can, you know, it can be too much. So again, it's something that sort of needs to be balanced. So with all the elements, there are always these two sides of the pole, and being a, you know, negative and the positive, and being aware of the elements and the related chakras in our bodies can really help us work out what we need to do in order to unblock any stuck energies in quite an evocative and imaginative way. And I've certainly found this method very helpful in my own meditation practice, to be consciously aware of the elements in our bodies, and these being the same as the elements around us in the natural world. It can also help us experience our bodies in a looser, less possessive way, simply as sort of living manifestations of energy, of different kinds of energy, always in communication with the energies around them. There's kind of a constant giving and taking. So it's most obvious, I suppose, with the breath, which we'll come to when we talk about air. You know, there's constantly taking in, giving out. I mean, with earth, what you could think of in relation to earth energy, we need to take in solid food every day in order to maintain our bodies and keep it healthy. And we have to eliminate waste every day, you know. So literally, in terms of earth, we have to take it in every day. We have to give it away every day. There is a constant exchange of solid matter into our bodies and out of our bodies every single day. And thinking about things in that way might also make us more sensitive to the effect of what we eat, for example, on the environment and on the animals which may have played a part in producing our food. So, you know, you might ask yourself, how did that bit of scrambled egg end up on your plate? What had to happen for that? And then that might make you think twice whether you want to really eat that or whether you might want to change what you eat. So, in a way, thinking about yourself and the world in terms of elements can also sharpen your ethical practice in that way. So I'll stop here, really, and just see whether any of what I've said, in combination with us having done this meditation before, might have brought up any questions or thoughts.